You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Hey folks, it's Ben Mathis here with just a quick favor to ask. We love having great advertisers support the show, but in order to continue doing that, we need your help. So please go to podsurvey.com/kick and take a quick anonymous survey that'll help us get to know you a little better. That way we can show advertisers just how enthusiastic our audience is about Kick-Ass News and keep the show free for listeners like you. Even if you've taken our podcast listener survey before, the current one is new and different, and it's really important that we have lots of listener feedback, so I'd really appreciate it if you take a minute to fill out this new one. Plus, as a thank you, once you've completed the survey, you can enter to win a $100 Amazon gift card. Again, that's podsurvey.com/kick, podsurvey.com/kick. Thanks for your help, and thanks for listening. Today's podcast is sponsored by Nadex. Do you want to try day trading the markets but worried about the risk? What if you could choose your maximum risk and reward up front? Well, you can with binary options on Nadex. Trade global stock indexes, commodities, Forex, even economic numbers, all from one account and always with limited risk. See for yourself why over 100,000 members choose Nadex. Find out more at Nadex.com. Trading on Nadex involves risk and may not be appropriate for all investors. And now, enjoy the podcast.
Jewish cheerleaders.
Oh, give me an A.
A.
Give me an A.
A.
Give me an A.
A.
What's that spell?
Let's
hit it.
Jewish mime.
Boy, is this a small room. I'll walk against the wind. Out of my nuts, I'll walk with the wind. I'll get there fast.
Hi, I'm Ben Mathis, and welcome to Kick-Ass News. That was a clip of Billy Crystal and Robin Williams cutting up at the Improv Comedy Club as Robert Klein eggs them on from offstage. It's hard to overstate the impact that the Improv has had on the comedy world. Prior to that, no one had ever heard of a comedy club, and the very idea of making an entire evening's entertainment out of a lineup of nothing but comedians was completely unheard of. In the 1950s and early 60s, the mere 200 or so working comedians in America had to hustle for gigs at the Jewish resorts in the Catskills, at mob-owned nightclubs where the comics were warm-up acts or filler in between main attractions, or in dingy strip clubs and faded burlesque halls. But all that changed when the monocled showman, Bud Friedman, opened the doors of his little cabaret in New York's Hell's Kitchen in 1963. With a small stage, a single microphone, and a brick wall for a backdrop, the Improv invented the look and the whole concept of the comedy club, inspiring thousands of imitators over the past 50 years. Along the way, the Improv provided a steady stream of talent for The Tonight Show and The Ed Sullivan Show, created the first stand-up special and a popular television comedy showcase, Evening at the Improv, and launched the careers of comedians like Robert Klein, Richard Pryor, Rodney Dangerfield, Robin Williams, Andy Kaufman, Lily Tomlin, Larry David, Richard Lewis, Adam Sandler, and Jay Leno, just to name a very few. There's not a comedian over the past half century who hit it big without having paid his dues and honed his act at the Improv. Now many of the comedians who performed there and the club's owner, Bud Freeman, reminisce and share stories about the club and their fellow comics in a new book called The Improv, an oral history of the comedy club that revolutionized stand-up. Today, legendary impresario Bud Freeman and his co-author, entertainment writer Trip Wetzel, join me on the podcast to talk about the history of this iconic venue and how so much of it was a happy accident that Bud never planned on. Bud talks about when Rodney Dangerfield bombed his first time on stage at the Improv. He recalls being completely dumbfounded in the very best way by Andy Kaufman's act and Larry David's habit of getting in fights with the audience. Bud and Tripp reveal some of the celebrities who got their start offstage at the Improv, including the famous movie Tough Guy who started out as a bouncer. They recall the year that comedians went on strike. They dish about the down-and-dirty comedy club wars with the Comedy Store's Mitzi Shore and the rumors that she might have been behind the fire that burned down the Hollywood Improv in 1979. Plus, Bud talks about managing Bette Midler and Jay Leno, what makes him laugh, and why he's probably the only man in L.A. who still wears a monocle. Coming up with Bud Freeman and Trip Wetzel in just a moment. Not a comedian in the world who doesn't know the name Bud Freeman. Though not a comedian himself, he all but invented stand-up comedy when he opened the Improv in New York City in 1963, launching the careers of many of America's favorite comedians. Together with entertainment writer Trip Wetzel, he's written a new book called The Improv, an oral history of the comedy club that revolutionized stand-up. Bud and Trip, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Hello. Thank you.
I was a little worried because, well, everyone knows you had a stroke 2 years ago and that you sometimes have trouble speaking and all that.
Well,
and so,
particularly now, I'm eating
a Ritz cracker.
Ritz cracker.
Yeah. But so, yeah, I was a little worried. In my mind, I pictured, like, you know, Bob Hope in his 90s when he was starting to lose his mind.
No,
but you're sharp as a tack.
Sharper than a tack.
Yeah. I should point out that this isn't just Bud's memoir, but you also include dozens of interviews with comics and others for whom the Improv played a significant role in their careers. Trip, just to give the listeners an idea, who are some of the comedians who got their early starts at the Improv, either in New York or here in Hollywood?
Well, Jay Leno, Jimmy Fallon, Richard Lewis, Jerry Seinfeld, Judd Apatow. Just about everyone who's listed on the cover of this book. I mean, the list goes on and on. There were so many, but these are some of the big marquee names. If I left anyone out, I mean, I probably have left many people out because just about everybody started there. More to the questions, who didn't start there, you know?
And I was surprised to read that apparently, Bud, you never intended to go into the comedy business. You wanted to be a Broadway producer.
Yes.
How did opening the Improv fit into that plan originally?
Well, I was always a vital part of the plan.
Yeah.
Trip.
Yeah, okay, you got it. Well, it was always a vital part of the plan. I mean, it was really a means for him to make an end because he wanted to be a Broadway producer. He had moved back to New York to do so when he turned 30 after working in advertising up in Boston. He was a child of the Depression, you know, and he didn't, you know, there was, you know, doing something in show business was not really a practical thing. He lost his dad when he was very young. You know, his mother, they struggled, you know, and so doing something, he wanted to do something practical. But when he turned 30, it was like a now or never time for him to get into to do this, and he didn't want to be an actor because he felt he didn't want to starve. He just couldn't tolerate that, and he thought that working on, you know, doing something in show business, he thought that being a Broadway producer sounded like an interesting idea. I don't know even how you thought about becoming a Broadway producer. I mean, what made you think about
it? Well, I was thinking of something of the theater. And,
And that seemed like a good choice.
Yeah.
But you didn't know the first thing about it.
Yeah, but, yeah. You know, I don't know.
And he was, and at the time, his his girlfriend at the time, who was later his first wife, was in the chorus of How to Succeed in Business, Without Really Trying, which was the hottest show on Broadway. And they would go out after the shows with a lot of the people in the shows to have, you know, go get something to eat. And the places that were in the theater district, like Sardi's or Downey's or some of the, what were some of the other places? And,
that's it.
Yeah. They couldn't afford the food, you know, it was expensive unless you were Ethel Merman or one of the big stars of the day. So, but Bud heard them discuss about, you know, when they were on the road doing, you know, the tryouts in Philly or Chicago or Boston, this little place or this little place where you could go up and, you know, sing and get something cheap to eat. And he thought, well, I'll start something like this in New York.
Okay.
And that's how it was born. I mean, you know, and then... And it sort of evolved from there. And
so
then,
it was a cabaret, kind of.
It was a cabaret,
It wasn't intended to be a comedy club. It was just kind of where people could sing, perform, tell jokes if they wanted.
It was always singer's route.
Singer's room.
You had people like Bette Midler and Liza Minnelli perform at the Improv.
Didn't you kind of discover Bette? Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you were her manager, I think.
Yeah,
right?
first manager.
Yeah. Was there some story where you managed her and then she auditioned for The Tonight Show and ripped her dress?
Yes, because Bud wouldn't give her his coat. It's a great, you know, they were in the cab going over to 30 Rockefeller Plaza. And they were getting out of the cab and you got out first or she got out first. I don't remember who.
I don't know.
And her dress was just, you know, and ripped. And they went in to get some safety pins. They couldn't find it. It wasn't actually the 30 Rock where they did the auditions. It was a theater near 30 Rock, I think.
It was in the Rockefeller Center.
But it wasn't 30. Was it in the NBC? So it was a theater there.
It was across the street. It was the Johnny Victor.
Yeah, Johnny Victor.
Little theater. They had all their auditions all up.
And Bette said that this was when you ceased to be her manager after you wouldn't give her your coat to cover her ass that was exposed.
She told on Johnny's last show.
Right. Yeah, I remember. Yeah. So you were more concerned with how you were going to look during this audition than how your client was.
Yes.
Now, how long was it before comedians began to surpass the musical acts at the Improv?
Well, surpass
or become the main attraction.
About 9 years, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Early '70s.
Okay.
But you still used comics until well into the '80s.
Singers.
You mean singers?
I mean, music. That's what I mean. Yeah.
I'm going to correct him because he's not mentally. He's not. Thank you.
We'll put up with Trip. It's okay, bud. It wasn't just on stage, but off stage, or the piano players. You had everyone from, I think, Dustin Hoffman to Barry Manilow as your piano player at the Improv.
No, right? The Barry was bought and paid for, but
Dustin was not.
Dustin just came in and played before the.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Crowley.
Yeah, because it's hard for us to imagine now, but for most of the Improv's life, you didn't actually pay the entertainers, right? They just came up for free for the exposure, right?
Is that the way you're supposed to do it?
Well, I wouldn't say most of its life.
If I was a club owner, I think so,
I wouldn't say most of its life because its life is, you know, 50
okay,
plus
it's 50 years,
years old.
But for the first decade or two, would you say?
Until the early 80s, until the problems with, you know, the well-documented problems with Mitzi Shore at the Comedy Store started, and promised to pay them whatever she would pay them, or match whatever he should pay them. But people forget, you know, the reason he didn't do that, he wasn't trying to be, you know, stingy or anything like that. He just didn't think about it because it was not the way that the club was started, and it was sort of an unwritten rule, and he just didn't think about it. And plus, he was not really in a position to pay them. I mean, it was because it was a very hand-to-mouth operation for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, and it sounds like it was the kind of place where just entertainers went after a show to hang out and sing and entertain for fun for each other, right?
Yeah.
Who was the first comedian who performed there? Do you remember?
Yes, sir. It was David Astor.
David Astor.
He was playing the Blue Angel. And anyway, he came in after the show. And he wanted it up, and I said, all right. And he killed.
Another one of the early ones that apparently was one of your favorites was Robert Klein.
Still is.
Yeah, so many comedians like Seinfeld cite him as an influence. What was different about Robert Klein?
Well, he didn't do
Yeah, you mean like Alan King or like the Catskills kind of comics?
And Alan King was good, you know, but he was an entirely different bird of a different feather.
Yeah.
And another early one was Richard Pryor. You talk about how he and other comedians like Robert would do these hilarious improvised scenes. Now, I always think of Richard Pryor as a stand-up guy, not necessarily an improv guy who did like sketches like that, but he did that sort of thing in the early days.
Yeah, he was glorious.
Yeah, you were in love with him from the beginning. I mean, you always thought you knew it's something special just from the minute you laid eyes on him.
Was he difficult to work with? I know that I've heard stories that he could be pretty kind of an asshole sometimes.
He was pretty good, but he
accused you of being a racist one time.
Yeah,
really.
The only time he was with a black lady, he accused me of
being a racist.
And then he stormed out with a gal, and he came back about 6-8 months later, and he hugged me, kissed me, and all that. And the reason he came in that night was to pick up a waitress. He knew her. Paula Best, holy mackerel. I remember that name. She was daughter of Larry Best.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he was a big Catskill comedian.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
And she was a waitress. She was working.
Yes.
I read that, I think it was him, or it might have been another black comedian, who accused you of being a racist because you wouldn't pay him.
No, it was him.
It was him.
Yeah.
And what did you say to him?
I treat you as I treat
all the comedians.
All comedians.
Yeah, you don't pay anybody.
I don't.
Any of them.
That was my wife's line.
Yeah. Now, Rodney Dangerfield was another one who played at your club a lot. Apparently, he bombed the first time that he performed at the Improv.
Badly. Yeah.
What happened?
He was drunk, and he came in after work in the living room.
Living room, Upper East Side.
And he bombed. And the next night, he came in sober, and
He rocked the house.
He rocked the house. I mean.
So he made his comeback.
Yeah, and this is another, just speaks to how the Improv. Anything could happen there.
Mm-hmm.
The day that he came in drunk, Bud was at the club, and he was coming in the afternoon, I guess 2 or 3 o'clock, whatever time he used to come into the club, was reading the New York Post. And he happened to turn to the art section and saw this little review about Rodney Dangerfield, who was there and described as a sort of very buttoned down kind of Dick, erudite Dick Cavett kind of type.
Really?
Yeah.
Rodney Dangerfield?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
Rodney,
that's not what I picked.
The name.
Yeah, he thought that's what he thought.
Huh.
And then he came in reeking of booze. His tie was out of place. I mean, it was pitiful, but it was amazing, And his legend, his drinking was legendary. There are so many. There's a time that one Passover that he passed out at Jerry and Ann's table. That would be Jerry Stone and Ann Muir's table.
So yeah.
4 martinis, and you guys just went on with the meal, remember?
Yeah, 2 other big acts that played the club.
Great
a lot.
People.
Now, Rodney had his own club in New York, but he preferred, when he was working on material, to do it in your club, not in his own club.
No. Yeah, he was like, if I'm going to get it wrong, I'm going to screw something up, I'm not going to do it in my club. And the club still exists, and it's still, I live actually a block away from them on 63rd between 1st and New York, and it's like, they haven't cleaned it up since that time. It's like something like out of a different area. I mean, the waiters still wear the red jackets. There's this guy, you made him, Charo, this waiter that's been there forever. He's got to be probably in his 80s, but he's been there forever, and you see him every night smoking a cigarette out on the street, because I pass by it every night, and it's the sound system is horrible, but it's dark, and it hadn't changed a bit, but
We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with more with Bud Freeman and Trip Wetzel when we come back in just a minute. I got to tell you, folks, I've been eating extremely well lately thanks to HelloFresh. HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking more fun, so you can focus on the whole experience, not just the final plate. Each week, HelloFresh creates new delicious recipes with step-by-step instructions designed to take around 30 minutes for everyone from novices like myself to seasoned home cooks short on time. They source the freshest ingredients delivered right to your doorstep in a recyclable insulated box for free, and they measure everything to the exact quantities needed, so there's no food waste. They even employ 2 full-time registered dietitians who review each recipe to ensure it's nutritionally balanced. HelloFresh is now offering light fall meals, and they've just introduced breakfast options, all for less than $10 a meal. I've been making these delicious meals from HelloFresh for several months now, and I'm so excited about it that I even ordered HelloFresh for my parents. They're empty nesters now, and my poor mom doesn't need to cook for an army anymore and deal with a big kitchen mess. So the quick and easy recipes from HelloFresh with their pre-portioned ingredients work perfectly for them. And if you're a family who likes to cook together, it's a great bonding experience, something you can do together with your spouse or your kids. Or even if you're a total amateur in the kitchen like me, you don't have to live on takeout or fast food. You can prepare delicious restaurant-quality meals in no time. This week, we made HelloFresh's buttered up steak with roasted potatoes and garlicky green beans. The sirloin steak was really good quality, the kind that you would get from a family butcher you really trust. Tender, not too fatty, had great flavor. The green beans and potatoes were fresh and tasty, and it actually took us less than 30 minutes with no hassle and very little cleanup. So give HelloFresh a try, and you're going to be glad that you did. In fact, you can even get $30 off your first week of deliveries by visiting HelloFresh.com and entering KICK30 when you subscribe. That's HelloFresh.com and promo code KICK30 for $30 off your first week. Now, just to give you a sampling of the kind of meals HelloFresh offers, some of their upcoming menus include spiced Dijon salmon with apple arugula salad and couscous. Or how about honey-glazed pork tenderloin with sweet potatoes and green beans? I can't wait for that one. And if you want to get in on those great meals too, go to HelloFresh.com and enter our special promo code KICK30 when you subscribe to get $30 off your first week of deliveries. One more time, that's HelloFresh.com and KICK30 at checkout for $30 off your first week. Delicious ingredients you'll love to eat, simple recipes you'll live to cook. HelloFresh, get cooking. And now, back to the podcast. Before there was a comedy club like the Improv, where would working comedians go to actually get on stage and perform? Was it the Catskills, yes. Nightclubs?
Mm. Yeah, but performers were always the, open,
the second place, opening yeah. act. Yeah,
open
they were.
Always,
they were yeah. sort of sandwiched in. You know, you had. I mean, you did have in the village. You had, you know, Greenwich Village, the coffee house scene.
Right.
You know, places like upstairs at the downstairs.
No, there's 55th Street.
Okay. I'm sorry, you did correct me. I don't know why I thought. So this, some of this was a little before my time, too, but that was a faux pas.
Yeah.
But the Bitter End, you had stuff like the Bitter End,
yeah.
Places like that.
Yeah. And strip clubs, right? Like burlesque houses.
Well, the Bitter End was a music club. But
right.
But also.
But
there were lots of strip clubs, too. Yeah. Lots of strip clubs.
So there was no place where you had a whole lineup of comedians
and
where comedians were the main attraction.
Right. And it was the Catskills, of course, were shtick, you know, that was a sort of a different element. And when Bud opened, you know, the timing is riper than ever for that kind of satire, because this was this early 60s, you know, everything was changing. You had the comedy was changing, you know, so it was a perfect storm.
Yeah, because you had the counterculture and, you know, a certain degree of cynicism and willingness to take on society and institutions that wasn't there probably in the 50s.
Yeah, right.
Now, one of the comedians that you interviewed in the book, I forget who it was, makes an interesting point that the Improv and now comedy clubs in general are places where they go in and they can test out new material, build a set before they go on The Tonight Show or any other late night show. Before the Improv, was there anywhere where a comedian could go without a lot of pressure and actually work on their act and test out material before they went on The Tonight Show or Ed Sullivan?
That's a very good question.
There were places, but they weren't like...
They stripped clubs, for one.
I mean, they could go work, but there weren't a place really that was devoted to it, or they fostered it. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, because I have to think if they were performing in a nightclub with hundreds of people or whatever, you can't just kind of throw out material to test on an audience. Right. You have to come in a little bit more prepared, maybe.
Right.
That's a place where they could work, you know, where they could build a set before they go on TV and that sort of thing.
Right.
You pretty much invented not just the comedy club as an institution, but the entire aesthetic of the comedy club with the single mic, the stool on stage, the brick wall for a backdrop. Every comedy club in America today basically copies the look of the Improv now.
Yes. Yeah. I get a royalties free show.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Yes.
That's become almost iconic. I mean, if you watch Seinfeld, the opening and the closing is basically, you know, the look that you invented of the comedy club.
They took a lot of scenes from the Improv, at the Improv.
Tell us a little bit about the first time Andy Kaufman came into the club.
He came in and he said, "I like to date you, blah, blah, blah." And he's joined a foreign man. And I said, you want to go on? And he said, yeah, did I go on? And he goes on as this foreign man. And he goes, I don't know, 25 minutes. Mm. And he says, I'd like to do an impression of the king.
Elvis
Presley. Presley.
Bud was getting really nervous because the people in the audience were really starting to get worked up.
Yeah, because he was
Andy
just doing these bad impressions,
Andy,
right? As a guy from
Andy
Sardinia or somewhere, the Caspian Sea.
Fry of the Cat, and then, you know, Archie Bunker. I'm going to do the Archie Bunker. Now meet that. Get out of the chair. You dingbat, you know, that kind of thing, you know. And he was doing all this stuff, and it was getting worse and worse. And Bud was getting nervous, and you were like, what the hell am I going to do? Because he was afraid, you know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in a comedy
Natives
club, people
restless.
Get mad when they get mad sometimes. And then he turned around and, you know, knocked it out of the park again. He was in another thing like, you know, similar to like Roddy, and he was in love with him after that, am I correct?
Yeah.
Yes,
he just did this dead-on Elvis impersonation, right, for like two or three numbers.
Yeah. And he continued to be one of the top acts until he died, you know, but was just – love them. Bud brought him out here.
Yeah. When you came out to L.A., I guess Johnny Carson moving The Tonight Show from New York to Burbank was a big part of why you opened an L.A. Improv and came out here yourself. When that happened, did the comedy universe sort of shift from the East Coast to the West Coast?
Well, in my mind, it had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, truth be told, I wanted to live out here.
Oh, yeah?
This is
get some sunshine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you wanted to be out here. You know, he'd always wanted to live out here. You know, there were a number of things, but he'd wanted to live out here ever since he was in the Army. And he had come out with some, I think it was before, you'd heard Howard Keel at the Hollywood Bowl singing Ave Maria to a younger audience. Howard Keel.
Annie Get Your Gun, Broadway actor.
Annie Get Your Gun, Oklahoma. But in the 80s, he was Clayton Farlow in Dallas. He was Miss Ellie's second husband.
Yeah.
And Bud heard him, and he'd always had it in the back of his mind to do it. But certainly, you know, Johnny coming out here was, because that was a tectonic shift, and all of the big guys were coming out here. You know, and those were the days when an appearance on Johnny Carson could make or break your career. You know, a case in point was Freddie Prinze, who got Chico in The Man and started with Bud after one shot.
Yeah, those days, you could go within a week from being a comic in a club to having your own sitcom, basically. You get seen by the right booker at a club, next day you're on The Tonight Show or Jack Parr or something like that, and then suddenly a network signing you to a deal.
Johnny Carson.
Yeah, only Johnny Carson.
Only,
that's
as a matter of fact, you mentioned Jack Parr. Freddie Prinze got the Johnny Carson.
We're doing Jack Parr.
Jack Parr, and then David Brenner took his tape to Johnny, and
rest is history. Now, you come out to L.A. and immediately find yourself under attack by Misty Shore, the owner of the Comedy Store. to hear you guys describe it, it almost sounds like a mafia turf war was going on between these two comedy clubs in L.A., huh?
Well, she said to the comics, you cannot perform at the
Improv. If you're going to work for me. But Jay stood up.
Jay Leno.
He's my first manager in New York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And people, the other thing people, a lot of people don't remember, I mean, this is kind of an interesting thing. The way the Comedy Store started was it was Sammy Shore and Rudy DeLuca, who were New York comics that were acquaintances of Bud. They wanted to open a room for their cronies, basically. They never had big acts. I mean, they were middling comics. Sammy was Elvis Presley's, his opening act. He opened for Ann Margaret in Vegas. He had some sitcom roles in the 70s, but he was never a major act. But they wanted to basically have some place for their cronies to hang out. Mm-hmm. And they got a good deal at Ciro's, which was a very iconic Hollywood restaurant.
Right.
There. So they came to Bud and said, Bud, we're thinking about opening a place like the Improv. What do you think? And it's fine. And Bud's like, fine. And at the time, he had no idea that he was coming out here. And this was 72. And the store opens in May of 72 or April of 72. And the Tonight Show comes out either in April or May of 72. I may have my exact dates. I mean, within a month, of course. So they basically came out here. And by the time Bud came out here, Mitzi and Sammy had divorced and she got Club in the Comedy in the divorce settlement. she was the one who came up with the name. She had a little empire, and of course comics were coming out here and they were already starting to come out here. So she had sort of been ahead of the curve because Bud was not out here yet. And then when he got here, that's when the problem started. And then, she kept saying, you can't do this, you can't do that. And Jay was the first one really to stand up to her, even though he was not, he was, at the time, he was not even a big star yet. He was doing, doing minor roles on sitcoms.
But he was.
Everybody knows he was a hot guy.
Yeah.
But he was doing some roles on Norman Lear sitcoms and things like One Day at a Time. He had a thing, and this is an interesting point because he had a role on Good Times. Which Jimmy Walker was the star of and got because of Bud, and wouldn't perform for Bud, even though he could have written his own ticket and was an investor in Bud's club. And Jay had a little role on Good Times where he played a patient in the VD clinic. and the point is that, Jay was loyal to Bud and Jimmy was not. And he's still the most ungrateful comic.
I'm glad you said it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he stayed at the Comedy Store.
And his thing was, I'm only here. I'm not going to make waves with Mitzi, but he could have, and he did.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, at a certain point, an arsonist burned down your L.A. club, and weren't there rumors that Mitzi maybe, might have been behind that or someone who worked for her?
If you watch the television series.
I'm Dying Up Here.
It's based on the Comedy Store, I think, right?
Even though they say it's a composite, the guys say it's a composite. Everybody knows that because I interviewed Dave Flabotti and those guys. I did a piece on, I actually got to do an interesting piece for Variety right before the show came out about how it was mirroring, the real life people. And I got to talk to some of the old guys like Rick Overton and Kathy Gladman, who were both at our party the other night.
Now, have there ever been comedians who Bud just, who maybe they were popular with other people, but you just personally didn't get them or get the appeal, get why they were funny?
David Brenner.
Yeah.
Dave Brenner.
And you just didn't get, he was popular, but you just didn't get why. It wasn't your type of humor. Yeah.
Well, he found him to be very arrogant,
And, personally.
Yeah, early. And, and the other thing, too, is he was older than a lot of these other comics. I mean, David already had a career. He was a news producer in Philadelphia. He was kind of always trying to show Bud up, I think. And I think that pissed you off,
Yeah, not at all. No, he was.
I think something about his attitude sort of always rankled you a little.
No. Then he came in three nights. I was open, and he said, "Let's bygone be gone." And
out here,
And I said, "Hey, thank you."
Yeah.
And he said, "I'll go on for you tonight." And
Freddie
well,
was about to go on. Okay, I'll shut up.
And I said, well, you know, Freddie's going on.
He's already here.
It is. And then there's three lies that were...
Well, what happened, basically?
Wait a minute.
Okay. All right.
Wait a minute. This is a good story.
All right, okay. I'll shut up.
Trip warned me you two are like an old married couple before we even got there.
Anybody.
I don't know. I wasn't there. You
I
were.
Know.
I don't dare speak.
I'm going to think about it. I'm going to think about it. I'm not going to give you a hint. Look it up. Look it up in.
All right.
Anyway.
All right. That's okay.
The point is, he came in. I think he came in, you know, and wanted Bud to immediately put him on, and Bud didn't because he had these other people there, and it started the whole thing over again.
Yeah.
Although they were cordial a couple of times when you saw each other in New York, once at a Friars Club event and at the Plaza,
Another one I heard was kind of like that was Larry David. I've always heard these stories that. He would walk on and walk off, or he would get in these fights with the audience if he got heckled. Did you guys ever see that?
Oh, yeah. He says, Alan's
Wybell tells the story, you know, Saturday, the great, fantastic comedy writer Alan's Wybell, about how, when, you know, he knew he was following Larry at, say, 10:30. He'd get to the Improv by 9:45 because there was a good chance that... You know, Larry would storm off stage.
That's what I heard. He would get in these arguments with the audience and stuff.
And, you know, the first time he came to the Improv, he had never done stand up in his life. And he asked Bud if he could just do it. But he said, you know, no.
Are you a stand up comic? No. Get out of here.
Now,
Lenny and Squiggy.
Lenny and Squiggy from Laverne and Shirley.
Now, I assume that both of you still go to comedy clubs and are up on the scene. I wonder who, maybe for each of you, is the funniest comedian that you've seen over the past year who may not be a national name yet, someone who's about to pop.
Yeah, I don't go out that much.
Really?
I don't go out that many to the Improv or anybody.
Oh, okay.
There are a lot of good people. I mean, I like guys like Pete Corielli. You know, there's a very, very, very funny comedian in New York, African-American comedian named Godfrey, who is...
Okay, not Gilbert Godfrey.
No, his name is Godfrey, but he can do incredible. Have you ever heard of him before?
Yes.
He does incredible impressions.
Really?
Yeah, see him. There's a guy named, Jewish comic named Modi Rosenfeld, who's amazing. Okay. Jeffrey Ross is very good. I saw him at the Improv the other night. He's great, you know. So there are a lot of Lenny Marcus... Okay. Sebastian Maniscalco,
names.
A lot of people. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to have to look out for those.
Yeah. A lot of these are not brand new to the scene, but they're just
Know. But they may not have had a Netflix special yet or something like
Many,
that.
Well, they've been around. I mean, Jessica Kearson, you know, a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, before we go, Bud has played himself in a number of movies over the years, including Man in the Moon and Funny People. I just have to ask: have you ever lost the part of Bud Friedman to another actor?
No, but I've been threatened with it.
You've been threatened? to recast you? Well, again, the book is called The Improv, An Oral History of the Comedy Club That Revolutionized Stand-Up. Bud Friedman and Trip Wetzel, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. It's been our pleasure.
Yes.
Today's episode was sponsored by Nadex. Want to try day trading markets but worried about the risk? What if you could choose your maximum risk and reward up front? Well, you can with binary options on Nadex. Trade global stock indexes, commodities, Forex, even economic numbers, all from one account and always with limited risk. See why over 100,000 members choose Nadex. Find out more at Nadex.com. Trading on Nadex involves risk and may not be appropriate for all investors. Thanks again to Bud and Trip for joining me on the podcast.
order their book, The Improv, an oral history of the comedy club that revolutionized stand-up on Amazon. And if you want to go to The Improv and have some laughs, they have 20 locations across the U.S., including their flagship club on Melrose Avenue in Hollywood. For showtimes, tickets, and more, visit improv.com. Be sure to subscribe to Kick-Ass News on iTunes and leave us a review while you're there. Don't forget to take our listener survey. It only takes 5 minutes at podsurvey.com/kick. You can visit Kick-Ass News on Facebook and follow us on Twitter @KickAssNewsPod. And be sure to recommend Kick-Ass News to your friends on your social media. And if you really want to help out, then donate to our GoFundMe campaign at GoFundMe.com/KickAssNews or click on the donate button at KickAssNews.com. As always, I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. For now, though, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News. Kick-Ass News is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.